This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Friday, a special Friday, start of Passover, and of course, Good Friday and Easter weekend. Coming up, good morning.
Good morning.
Are you going to do a Seder tonight?
Going to my sister's. I will bring some extra spicy horseradish.
Oh, because she doesn't go for the extra spicy?
Actually, last year's extra spicy that I brought was less strong than hers. Now, Marjorie... does a good meal, and it's fun to get together with the family.
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing. And then we're actually going to stop at somebody else's Seder afterwards for dessert.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep you busy tonight anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I always overeat, try not to overdrink. Supposed to have 4 glasses of wine.
Oh, is there a rule? I didn't realize. I don't know
in
much
the service,
about
there are four glasses of wine, and there's a prayer at each, and each has a different significance. But as far as I know, you're going to get calls right away. The papers will have big stories tomorrow. As far as I know, however, there's nothing wrong with having more than that. I think that is those are the glasses you say a prayer over, but you can have others.
You're right. They're going to pick up on
and,
that.
And one of the big changes in society over the years is kosher Pesach wine used to not be the best, and today... you can buy some very expensive wines kosher for Passover. Capitalism's caught up with religion.
Well, that's interesting. That's very, very interesting.
So, and you?
I've got Easter out at the house, which I'm going to cook for.
And do you have an Easter egg hunt?
No, we're past the Easter egg hunting time.
But, I always liked Easter egg hunts. People in the neighborhood had them, and... We would paint them in school, as I remember.
You couldn't do that today.
Regardless of your religion, everybody painted. It was a fun thing to do as I'm a kid. Maybe it was in the second grade or something.
That's kind of the argument that I always have here when you hear about the religion and government thing in public schools. I go, what are you kidding me? There's no downside here, really. I mean, I know the legalities and the atmosphere that we live in today, but kids miss out.
Well, you know, to celebrate the customs of other people's religion, I don't see anything wrong with that. That doesn't mean you believe in their religion, but some of these things are nice. And the fact that lots of people, it's their religion, you get a chance to say to them you appreciate and to understand what they think. And, you know, all of these religions have, in many senses, common bonds and common objectives.
Well, look at today. Today is Good Friday, but it is also the start of Passover. And I've always maintained that almost all religions actually are based on, you know, ancient beliefs, and they have similarities.
Christianity came out of Judaism and Islam at the same time.
But even prior to those.
I mean, it's always struck me there's a lot of customs. Like halal, it's not exactly the same as kosher, but the fact that diet is part of the religion and, you know, the Catholic Church. I remember as a kid, somebody came. One time my father brought somebody home from work on a Friday night for dinner at the last minute. My mother dug out the frozen lamb chops and served them, and the guy said, I won't eat them. He was Catholic, mm-hmm. And in those days, Catholics
fish.
Didn't eat on Friday.
Sure.
And I remember thinking to myself, you know, my mother, this was, we didn't have lamb chops very often. And
it was so this was a special occasion.
Yeah, I think she opened a can of tuna fish for him. I don't remember. And she is gone, and I guarantee you so is he and my father. But I think all of these different holidays are nice, and it's a sign of respect for other people's religion that you not only protect their right, but, you know, sort of in some senses celebrate along with them.
Well, I've always maintained that if you prohibit and or diminish someone else's beliefs, you really do the same to your own.
Thank you for supporting building a mosque.
Right.
That's exactly the argument for it. You couldn't be more right.
And I always did support the mosque.
You know, if you want to have your religion, and people that don't want to keep church and state separate, totally separate, if they're really religious, they should rethink that, I've always thought, because someday the state religion may not be theirs. So the more you believe, the more you should want separation. I guess if
but not ignorance or ignoring of all that is around you.
No, and you know, the courts have had their balances. You can have a Christmas tree in front of City Hall, but not a creche. You know, and you say, well, what's the difference? Yeah, that's what you have judges for, to make there are subtle distinctions. But if you go, I'll never forget the first year I was in Tokyo at Christmas time. It is a country where there aren't very many Christians. You've never seen as many Christmas decorations in your whole life.
It's a good time.
It's a good time, and it means something to them in their own ways, and there's nothing wrong, and it doesn't insult people who really believe, who are Christians and practicing and devout. It doesn't take away anything from them. It's, in some senses, I don't know if it's a sign of respect or whatever, but it just doesn't hurt anybody else, I've noticed that.
Real fast, because I don't want to dwell on this, but yeah. I'm curious as to your opinion. Why do you think religion has become such a hot button now? I mean, it hasn't really changed over the centuries. It's just a hot button now.
It's a lot easier to talk about that than how you're going to solve the economic problems of this country where we spend too much and have too little revenue. It's a lot easier to talk about that than to explain to people why, even though we don't have enough jobs, bringing immigrants here will create jobs for the people who are already here. I mean, it's a lot easier. All these things. I think some of these social issues, they're dredged up when elected officials don't want to focus on the things that they get elected for. You get elected to work on the economic issues, the legal issues, but not on those issues. And yet, I've always joked, if you're running for Senate, you focus on parking issues. If you're running for city office, you focus on national issues. Anything where you can't be accused.
Exactly, that you have nothing to do with. Right?
It's sad. I mean, you'd think having said that, we probably are better off than we are before. We are much more tolerant. The good old days were never the good old days, at least not as good as we remembered them. And I think we'd be a lot better off if we got off the social issues and those running for office would focus on what they're hired to
do.
And how they're going to do it.
All right, let's take a break right here real fast. We will come right back. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, we will get to you before we finish.
All right,
we continue here on the John Gambling Show. It is a Friday. Mr. Mayor, as you know, we usually have bumper music Friday.
And what's happened today?
Well, I was going to have Bloomberg bumper music Friday because we actually have a recording from Saturday night.
No matter where you came here from or what you want to be, we're all a part of one giant club right here in NYC. There is a brotherhood of Mike, a benevolent brotherhood.
A brotherhood of Mike from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
It's fun. Every year the press puts on a show, two acts, one for local elected officials, one for national policies and officials, where they spoof the mayor and whatever. And then ever since Lindsay's day, the mayor comes back with a Broadway cast rewriting a show. Doesn't go on. This didn't start till 12:15 in the morning.
Your part of it didn't start till midnight.
Well, because you can't start until 11:30 because they have to finish their
show,
and then they
got to
come over and put on
right?
their makeup again and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But also the press's teleprompter system was broken for 45 minutes, so everything got late and late and late. But traditionally, the mayor comes back as part of the cast, and they rewrite the show to spoof the elected officials here and the press and that sort of thing. And there's singing and dancing, and it's a lot of fun.
Was that what that was?
It was. Don't be a wise guy. And that was Rudy, if you remember, when he was in South Carolina 4 years ago. He, as a good sport, has appeared as Marilyn Monroe in drag with a wig and lipstick and a dress, and that's when he was hysterical. He really was a good sport about this. And in South Carolina, they, you know, he must be a transvestite or something.
Broadway, it's theater.
And it was interesting. The press on their segment, they interviewed Koch, Dinkins, and Giuliani and had played a video of the three of them talking about the Inner Circle and what it's done, and all three were good sports. And it's fun.
I was surprised that you did a couple of things that I saw you do, including that you had the cast of How to Succeed actually lift you up and flip you over a number of times.
You get up, they pick you straight up in the air, and then you just stay stiff and lean backwards. Now you got to trust them. They said they were going to be there when I got. They were.
That's like one of those business deals you go to, right?
And then you go over, and they do it again. And then there's what they call a pendulum. You stand there very straight, and you just stand on your feet, but you just literally fall to the side, and you get about 45, 50 degrees, and then they push you back up, and you go to the other side. One year we flew in like Spider-Man. This time I came in on a slide. Each year it's something different. We've done 10 of these so far, or 11 of them.
So you had Bo Bridges, I think, with
Bridges,
Nick Jonas?
Bo Bridges and Nick Jonas. There were some of the young girls. Oh, Nick, he was eager to, and Bo Bridges.
Oh, I thought they were running after you.
Yeah, I wish they were. That whole cast was great, and it's fun. We spend about 4 days working with the cast late in the afternoon for a little while. And, it's fun to see Broadway and get to know some of the actors. And we always go to see the show afterwards sometime. So the next month or two, we'll go see the show and we'll go backstage and take some pictures. And then we have a little reception for them and their families in the fall.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So
you think Bloomberg bumper music Friday?
As somebody said, keep your day job.
Okay, very good. Speaking of which, let's get to some of that today. Let's start with the crane. Let's start with the crane problem. It seems to be one that is continuing. We've had a number of accidents. When I say continuing.
Keep in mind, construction's a dangerous field. Cranes stress technology. If you remember in your physics class doing all those calculations to how much you can put at the end of the...
How many pulleys you have.
In this case, the crane... It's one of these mobile cranes. They drive up and then it goes. It's not a fixed crane, so there's slightly different inspections and rules. They apparently were up to date with inspections. They get virtually automatically, I'm told, a 3-month extension if they needed for parts of the inspection. They did do that. Whether it was somebody not doing what they were supposed to do, only time's going to tell. We have made some really aggressive reforms in safety and lots of new laws, and construction's a lot safer. I actually gave a talk last night at the Building Trades Employees annual dinner. But this one did receive a full inspection back on July of 11, as I remember. And, when you inspect, that means it's in compliance that day. It doesn't mean that it's incomplete. You can't inspect it every day. So what the inspectors will look at is how it was used and whether it was being maintained and all of that sort of thing. Our buildings department works with the MTA. It's an MTA construction project. But, we're all in this together, and we want to make sure that people are safe and construction workers go home. We want to keep construction going, but we also want to make sure that construction workers go home to their families.
Obviously.
Standing up.
Well, cranes and construction rules and regulations are obviously always being formulated and changing. You have suggested that you think it would be a good idea if crane operators had local experience, apprenticed here in New York City. But why is that controversial? It seems to me...
Because the union that represents the crane operators doesn't want a contractor to be able to bring in people from outside who may be union members but in a different union.
No, that I understand.
And so if the testing is a national test, they would be qualified to come here. If it's just a local test, you would have had to work here for a while to be able to take the test.
But it seems to be a sticking point here, or at least a point of discussion as to whether or not that should be included. Local apprentice should be included or not.
The unions want to. It doesn't make any sense.
I see. The unions want that clause
right,
in
but
there,
you know, the,
which
why,
I understand.
And incidentally, the national tests are more rigorous and over a broader group of kinds of cranes and procedures and that
gotcha.
Sort of thing.
Right.
But it is... Like a lot of these, what you read in the paper has nothing to do with the reasons behind it. It is the politics of the union or protecting the union, which, you know, education keeps coming back to that. You say, you know, why does the teachers union fight something that to you and I may make a lot of sense? It's because they're there not to improve education.
Yeah.
They're there to protect their members, yeah.
All right, to that point, big story in the Daily News this morning about those teachers that have been...
Yeah, the New York Times had a story about it as well today.
Accused of inappropriate touching and the like.
I think there might have been one on the Post as well.
Yeah, and yet they're still employed.
The state law says you have a right to a certain kind of arbitration. The arbitrators are picked jointly by the teachers union and the city. Sometimes they rule with the city, sometimes they don't. Some of their rulings don't make any sense, but the theory is that they don't want to be too tough on the union members because then the union will never allow them to be selected. Now, the city has to select has a vote in it as well, but if either one wants to block it, they can. And so the allegation is, I don't know whether it's true or not, but the allegation's always been that some of these arbitrators are not reluctant, just will not impose any penalties. You know, maybe if you were a serial axe murderer, you might get a slap on the wrist, and I don't want to overstate that, but
wouldn't the better system be someone that is completely independent, that doesn't whose job does
okay,
not
but
rely
who would,
on
who
a
would
decision?
Who would pick that person?
Well, I don't
it's
know.
It's like saying dictatorship's the best form of government. The problem is who picks the dictator.
I understand that, but the schools, the system, and the
we
and
are
its
fighting
clients.
It. But I suggest, why don't you pick up the phone, call your state senator, your state assemblyman, or the governor, because these are typically state laws, or the mayor, or your city councilman, because we're all in this together, and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. And as a matter of fact, unless you get this changed, I'm going to vote for whoever runs against you, because that's what it's all about with elected officials. You know, you want to get reelected, and they try to be responsive. Now, I would argue you should lead from the front rather than the back. I saw one city councilman the other day. He signed on to something or other and said, oh, I did a survey. My constituents want this. And I thought to myself, what do you want? That never figured. Never. And I actually know this person, and I've heard him say similar kind of things. And no, I won't tell you who it is. But I'd say similar kinds of things. He once said to me, oh, you're right on that. And I said, well, why didn't you stand up and say so? He said, oh, my constituents don't want that. I couldn't say that. Well, you know, but the answer is these things go on, John, because you don't make a fuss. Why do we have guns in the hands of criminals and people on no-fly list and minors? You don't call your senator or your congressman and say, unless you change the law, I'm going to work for the other guy. As a matter of fact, the problem with a lot of this is you look at all of the positions of an elected official, and if they disagree with you on one or two, you say, I don't like that, but on balance, I like this person. Whereas a single issue advocacy group says it's up or down on my issue, and you can say, well, my opponent's even worse than your issue. They say, we don't care, we're going after you.
The people that are listening to you right now, to us right now, that read those stories that we're referring to in the newspapers are going, are you kidding me? That the group that is in charge would rather have it this way so that someone gets to keep their job rather than do what's right?
Yes. What do you mean? Why is this a surprise to you?
It's not a surprise. It's just that,
John,
I can't believe that we just...
Your father had the same discussion about the same thing, and your grandfather did,
understand.
And your son probably will. What do you want? Where are you going to sit
I
and say, I'm not going to take it anymore?
Common sense. I mean, it's...
When people act irrationally, my theory has always been 99 times out of 100, they are not irrational. You just don't understand what their objective is. How do you explain how Congress can vote to stop the enforcement of the laws that they passed that prevent minors and criminals and people with psychiatric and drug problems from getting guns? What rationale can they use? And they all do it, both sides of the aisle.
And they always have an answer.
And then how do you explain where they vote to stop us from closing failing schools where proficiency rates are single digits? How do you explain the fiscal policies where we just keep going on and on and on having fiscal policies that are going to bankrupt us? Why do they do that? Is it irrational? No. What they're doing is they're acting very rationally. It's just you don't understand what they're looking for. And what they're looking for is support. So when a group gets together and says, I'm going to support you, or if you don't vote with me, I'm going to work against you actively, give money to the other guy, campaign for the other guy, have phone banks for the other guy, they sit there and they say, I can go with gambling, but I still might get his vote anyways, or I can go with the other
guy who
is not going to take any prisoners. And, you know, it's I've just always believed this, that it's not, that you have to be able to come up with an explanation of why people act the way they do, and that's the explanation that fits.
Well, unfortunately, that's unfortunately where we end up on most of these political discussions of why actions are taken or in, or not taken, depending on the situation.
You should also know that Stu Loser never lets me miss anything, but I just wanted to point out that he points out that we are pushing for a tougher national exam for all Ukraine operators and pair it with NYC experience requirements to ensure the city's unique work environment is taken into account.
There you go. Thank you. There you go. We always get the right information. That's why you got them. 8:32 in the morning here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Let me take a break with Joe Bartlett. A little news, a little break. We'll come right back. Don't forget, 800-321-0710. All right, 24 minutes before 9 o'clock. Again, let me remind you, if you've got a question for Mayor Mike, we've got two open lines, 800-321-0710. You got to get through Mike to get to the mayor. Employment numbers or unemployment numbers are out.
Well, unemployment, Stu says, 8.2.
Unemployment went down a tick.
Yeah, but unemployment is not the number people really watch because it's done by a survey of phone calls. And when the economy gets better, unemployment typically goes up.
Because more people are looking.
People start looking, right. That's a measure of how many people say they're in the workforce but don't have a job and would like one. And when the economy is terrible, people drop out and say, I'm not even going to bother to look, or on home when you call or something. So it's relatively unreliable. The jobs, number of people working, is the real key number.
The job creation number this morning that just came out, they were looking into the
200,000, yeah, 210,
but it only came out 120.
That is not going to be good for the stock markets. And the economy is a little bit better, but it is not running away on the upside, and there are some real problems in the world. We still have done nothing in Europe. They've papered over Greece, but Greece is tiny compared to Spain, and people are focusing on Spain.
I hear Portugal's got some issues,
but yeah,
too.
But Portugal, in all fairness, is small as well. I'm not making light of the needs and the people and that sort of thing. But in terms of whether or not the EU can really help and afford to bail them out, you can afford to bail out Portugal. You can afford to bail out Greece. Spain starts to get to be really problematic. And says that you've got in China, there's a lot of unemployment, a lot of problems. We always blame China. Everything is China, China, China. China has their own problems. They've taken
numbers.
Numbers
of people.
But the problems on the other side, you don't realize the problem in Asia generally is they have a very low birth rate. Japan, we all talk about, but Vietnam, I was there, and they have a 1.2 kids per family. Your population implodes with that. China has had a one-child policy for a long time.
Which
they discourage it.
They're turning it around.
Because there's not going to be enough young people to support the retirees. And in China, they've also got the problem. They've done a great job of taking 150 million people, that's half the size of the United States, into middle class. Now those people want clean air. They want clean water. They want automobiles,
roads,
big houses, apps, everything that we want. They still have, so they've got that problem. And they still have 350 million people who live on $1 a day. They've got big ethnic problems in the West. It is amazing how much they've done. And I guess the public is probably pretty happy with them. But to sit there and say, oh, everything in China is going perfectly and everything in America is going wrong is not fair. We whip ourselves too much and we blame others. We should look at ourselves. We are doing some things which are not good for our economy long-term, disasters for this country, our immigration policy, our education policy, our fiscal policies. And it has nothing to do with China. China, in the end, is a market for us. We'll sell stuff to China.
Do you predict or have you looked at, have you thought about the next China, if you will? If we're watching the Chinese go up the curve slightly and get to the problematic place that you just described.
Yeah, a lot of
is there somebody is, oh, is there is it Africa? Is it Africa?
Businesses not yet. Businesses went from Eastern China to Western China.
I know that.
Because of low wages in Western China. Then they've left Western China, or some have, for Bangladesh and Sri Lanka.
So you're
going to
get
Indonesia.
The unemployment problem in China.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's lots of people who are unemployed in China. The trouble is we are looking to blame somebody rather than ourselves. And it's not to say that the Chinese behave and work the way we want or should behave or whatever. You can lots of problems with everybody. People criticize America too, and some of those criticisms are right. But generally speaking, our problems are self-inflicted. We are shooting ourselves in the foot. You want to know why the income gap is getting greater. It really, if you go back and you say, why do you have today two breadwinners to give the same lifestyle that a one breadwinner family did 50 years ago. If you look at the educational levels and improvement in education in the United States versus the rest of the world, we led the way through high schools. We led the way through colleges. And now lots of other countries are doing what we did, and we've stopped improving. And that's why the average American is less productive, and it requires two breadwinners to have the same lifestyle that one breadwinner in America did before. And it's going to get worse. And we made some progress in our schools nationwide, but it's laughable compared the progress we made compared to what the need is. We are focusing on our kids worrying about things that are nice to have, but the basics of reading and writing and arithmetic gets so pushed back. I was talking to somebody the other day. They said they wanted some after-school programs. I said, yeah, the kind of after-school programs we need is remedial math. Oh, well, the kids don't want that. They want to go out and, you know, have a good time. Yes, well, which do you want?
So did I, but, you know, you were told to sit and
do that. Well, we did. Whether we remember that correctly, I don't know.
But I don't like to remember it that way.
Right.
But, okay. What draconian move needs to be made to turn it around?
Well, you need to stop.
It's got to be draconian, don't you agree?
The markets will eventually force draconian moves on us with the fiscal, because people will stop buying our debt, or there'll be crises that'll come along. There's nobody talking about the serious issues in the country and facing the real issues. I mean, take a look at what is the news we're talking about. Movie stars and, you know, that if you read the paper, you can't find out what's really going on in terms of the serious stuff. Now, the papers would say, and they're probably right, they're very democratic. The public doesn't want. Somebody's got to lead here. And I would argue it's the government, it's the executive and the legislature, and it's at the federal, state, and city level. Each of us should do it. You've got to make investments. Somebody's got to stand up and say, I know this is not palatable. We've got to stop this craziness. We, this year, our budget deficit will increase by something like $1.2 trillion. And when Congress tries to stop the deficit expanding, one side says, I want to reduce taxes, which is as Looney Tunes as you could possibly do, or saying, I'm only going to tax the rich. It just doesn't make any difference. There aren't very many rich. I don't care how much money they have. The real money is
in the middle.
In the middle, where most of the people are. Right. Or they say, we're going to increase our spending rather than decrease our spending. We're going to spend our ways out of the problem. That's as Looney Tunes as the guy that says cut, and it's going to help the problem. You have to raise revenues and reduce expenses, and it's got to be in programs that are used by everybody, because that's where the money is. So, we can't touch Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and we can't touch tax rates for the middle class. Then there's no hope. And you're going to get more and more in trouble. And someday we're going to look back and say, look what our parents did to us. And it's just, you know, and our immigration policy, we're moving industries overseas. Don't start me on this.
I wanted to start with you because I find it interesting, and I think the people listening find it interesting as well, because you certainly have a perspective that is unique, and I think that it's important to hear, because when I listen to you and others that obviously support your particular thoughts and ideas, I only see a cataclysmic event. As you say, it'll be the markets.
I think it was Winston Churchill that said you can always rely on America to do the right thing after exhausting all other possibilities.
And that's where we're exhausting all the possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, to some extent, it's a function of democracy. If you want democracy, then you have lots of different ideas and you have everybody chiming in and you take your time to study and you try different things. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Keep in mind, America's done pretty well for the last 235 years with democracy, but it is a painful process. I was thinking about that yesterday for some reason or other. Some things that we got done, and it just took forever to do them. And you say, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you just go and do what's right? Except that, incidentally, what's right is my definition of what's right.
Sure.
And I'm only one of 8.4 million people. Right.
As long as you're picking the dictator.
Absolutely.
Everything's going to be okay. All right. But thank you for that. That was interesting. The 911 report, what can you tell me?
Number one, response times are at an all-time low. Deaths by fire are at all-time low. Life expectancies at an all-time high, and 3 years greater than the country as an average. So if you look and see, let's just look at the results. They're there. There is a preliminary report of somebody that did a study to look at some of the things. We are combining. This is all about another union issue. This is where the whole thing comes ginned up. We have combined, or in the process of combining, police and fire response. I've got to get this right, but fundamentally, you used to call in, you call 911, and it's a police department group that answered the phone, and if you needed a criminal, a cop, they sent the cop. If you needed fire, they sent you, they transferred you over to a fire.
911.
That person retook all the information and then dispatched the fire. Now we've combined it so one person takes the information and it goes multiple places. If you needed an ambulance, a fire truck, and or engine, and a police car, it used to be 2.5 calls, okay? Today, it's a lot better. Is it totally combined yet? No, but we're getting closer and working in that direction. It works. It is just a jurisdiction. I want to keep, these guys don't want to take the other guy's job or do the same thing as the other guy, and there's a lot of pride, and that's what this is all about. And the working paper that some outside consultant looked at, you know, we'll read it. You can't take a working paper that nobody's really checked the facts or anything and just put it out because all of a sudden everybody believes that's the truth. When we have a final report, we'll get it out there. And there are different ways of measuring it. One of the things, when you measure the response time, do you measure from when the call, the computer says the call is there, because now if you have to wait to answer the phone, which you generally don't. 311 can get overloaded. 911 almost never does, and you don't want it to. Do you include that time? Then from when they first take the information or it gets to the guy who says to the truck or the ambulance or the car, you go. From where do you measure it? And then when it gets there, how do you know they got there? And there's no simple answers to any of this stuff. But the bottom line is every study shows we have the lowest response time. And incidentally, the people that show up are better trained and better equipped than ever before.
I don't think anybody's argued that.
And the results are life expectancy. That's, you know, if the results are saving your life and giving you a better service than anyplace else, thank you very much. We can then talk. I was looking the other day at the murder rate. We finished the first quarter with a record low number of murders, by two, but it was better than being worse by two. For the best year was in 2009, I think, and this year. But in the middle of the month, we had something like 75 murders, and Chicago had 95. Chicago has a population less than a third of our size. So if you adjust it per capita, it's four times us. Now, they've got a new mayor, and I love the last mayor, and Rahm Emanuel is proving to be a very good mayor. He's got his hands full, and he's going to work hard at this, and they'll get it under control. But you don't realize just how safe we really are here.
Car show over at the Javits opens up today, always a big New York City event here. The Taxi of Tomorrow is on display.
I sat in one. It's really quite amazing.
You like what you see?
Oh, it's just spectacular. It's so much better than what you have. You don't have that big hump in the middle. You have enormous amount of leg room.
Doors open. You doors can get in and out.
So you don't open. You know, one of the things that happens, you open the door and a bicyclist hits or a
sure.
car takes it off.
These are sliding doors.
These are sliding doors. You control your own air conditioning. You've got, there's entertainment, there's places to plug in your mobile phone and charge it. I mean, there's a, it looks, it all feels so much bigger because there's a glass roof. And so you look up.
So you can see the buildings and look
you
up.
You can see it, but it just gives you a feeling sure. of a much bigger space.
When do we get them?
It's a lot less claustrophobic.
When do we get them?
I think in the 13, mm-hmm. next year.
Next year sometime.
Yeah, and then it's over a period of 8 years because these cabs have to be phased in. Now, if the cabs are more fuel efficient, some of the drivers will and fleets will phase them in quicker than their mandatory requirements just because you save enough money on fuel.
Tell me
but that's probably more a function of the cost of gasoline.
What's the status of the Attleboro cab deal?
On schedule. I don't remember when. I just don't remember when they start, but soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, there's no speed bumps in...
There'll always be somebody that'll try to stop it and sue and this, that, other thing. You know, the governor made a commitment, and as did the mayor, that we're going to get service to the other 4.5 boroughs that didn't have it, and we're going to live up with that commitment.
All right. I understand you won an Emmy this week.
I did.
I mean, you'd
eat
be
your heart out.
Broadway stage, Emmy.
You know, that's my next career. Bridges and I were talking about this. Actually, I was talking to Jonas. Nick and I are the same age. You know, just heartthrobs for teenagers. I can see that. No,
whatever you say.
Film and television business is booming here. I don't know, 114 movies made last year, some number like that, and 23 sitcoms. It employs 100,000 people. It generates $5 billion worth of activity. And you think all the money goes to a few stars. It doesn't. If you look at the budget for a movie or a sitcom, the actors have a very small part of that. It's the local cleaning store and taxi cab and coffee shop and carpenter and electrician. You know, all of these people that have...
People that bring the coffee.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very big part of our business. Kathy Oliver and the Mayor's Office of Film, Theater, and Television done a spectacular job. Movies started here. They moved out to California. They then went to Canada. Then they went to Eastern Europe, and they're actually coming back here. And all three of our big studios, and Steiner just opened a whole new, five new sound stages. All of them are booked. If you want to make the John Gambling story movie, you're going to have a tough time getting a sound stage.
Who would play? Who would play the title role?
Well, I would think, you know, in your case, what about Jackie Mason?
Jackie, thank you very much. My gosh, if you could, with insults of all insults, Jackie Mason. So what do you mean? I'm going to stop you on that one. 8 now before 9 o'clock. We'll come back with your questions. And we've got a full bank of
calls.
All right,
we'll 5 before the hour. Mr. Mayor, grab your headset right there. Let me go right to the telephones. Going to start right at the top of the list here. Line 1, Rita in Keyport, New Jersey. You've got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Good.
I just called to suggest a very strong thought. I know all the schools are having problems with closing and teachers being fired and blah, 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 blah. But the point is why can we not start something with the parents to teach them to follow through what the teachers are doing on a daily basis?
Well, you know, teachers say that all the time, and they couldn't be more right. I think parents have the primary responsibility to raise their child, not the school system. If you think about it, parents have the school system has a child for 5 days a week, 5 hours a day for, you know, 30 odd weeks a year, whatever it is. Parents have them a lot more, and it's the parents' kids, not the teachers' kids. We have parent coordinators in our school to try to work with the parents and tell them what the teachers are seeing and how the teachers think the parents can help. The real hard one, Rita, is unfortunately in life there are some kids who don't have parents, period, or one parent who's desperately trying to work to feed the family, or a parent that doesn't value education or maybe too young and too irresponsible or having drug problems. I mean, you've got, with 1,100,000 kids, we have every scenario you can imagine. And so how do we deal with that? We can't just walk away from those kids. Those kids arguably need us, the education system, more than the others. But it's the parents' responsibility, Reader. I could not agree more with you. They, in the end, they should start thinking it's their kids that are going to have to take care of them when they're in their dotage. So maybe they want to focus on education.
All right, Linda, you were next with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I'd just like to make you aware, Mayor, that on Tuesday, a call was made for an ambulance from PS 47 in Broad Channel. The call was made at 3:18. The ambulance arrived at 3:30.
Don't know whether 12 minutes, you know, you can't have an ambulance every place. On average, the response times have never been better. We'll take a look at that one in that in particular case. But, you know, we keep making it faster to get there. If there is enormous traffic, it takes the ambulances longer to get there. It depends on the time of day and whether there's a construction site that held up traffic and that sort of thing. It'd be wonderful if we could get an ambulance instantly, or a firefighter or a police officer, wherever they need it instantly, but that's just not the real world. Having said that, we spend a lot of time and a lot of money to keep improving the service, and response times are at record lows and life expectancies at a record high. But we'll take a look at this one, Linda.
All right, let's go to Mario. You've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi, John. Hi. I would use George Clooney to play you in a movie.
I like George Clooney. And you know what? He's not quite my age, but he's close.
Michael, Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to tell you one thing. Apropos of what you were talking about, and I'm not criticizing you. Here's what I'm trying to say. By raising the tolls on the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, has raised the tolls. What you're producing now is everyone is fighting to access untolled bridges. Hence, the Bronx, 138th Street, I'm very familiar with it. If you go up there in the morning, Michael, you cannot move. The Tri-Bar Bridge is empty. The main anchor of the center of New York. By the way, that is the geographical center of New York.
Mario, I'm going to have to let the mayor answer you, okay?
Mario, number one, some of these tolls are the Tri-Bar Bridge and Tunnel Authority, some the MTA, some the Port Authority. All of these agencies and have the same issue, and us too. If you want to keep improving the bridges and building more of them, subways and tunnels and everything, you have to have revenue. And the battle is always, do you have the people who use the facilities pay or the general taxpayer pay? They're all disincentives. If you're going to do it, you probably should toll all the bridges so you don't have that congestion pricing is going to come someday, and that was the reason for it. Tow it all and you'll spread out the traffic. It's not good. It'd be great if we didn't, if we could afford all this stuff without any taxes and without any tolls, but that's not the real world.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the real world is we're out of time. Have yourself a good weekend. Nice Passover.
Thank you, and happy Easter, and see you next week.
You got it.